Well, the judges had a very difficult job because they screened a lot of applicants for these presentations and had to select five. And I will say also that the five that have been selected really represent a diverse group and a diverse number of different backgrounds. We started out with three students that are seniors in high school. We've had a scientist who works on MRI surgery at the university level, an astronaut, and a fighter pilot. And we've all gotten some really unique perspectives from those four. Our last one is also very unique from a diversity standpoint. He is, first of all, our first Canadian finalist. He's from Fairview, Alberta, Canada, which is a long way north. He spent 35 years in the farming industry, but he's also a certified flight instructor up in Canada. He has a 1980 Pipistrel Alpha, and his CFI work is mainly for teaching ultralight students. Henry has a presentation titled, How Not to Fly.
Well, thank you very much. Honorable judges, ladies and gentlemen, fellow pilots, it's a great honor and a pleasure for me to be here tonight. It was interesting to hear that I was one of the finalists, and I'd like to share my ideas with you at this point. I like to follow the KISS principle when we look at things on the farm and when I look at things with my students. And KISS principle is keep it simple, stupid. So in that light, what I've done is I've brought coloring sheets and crayons for all the judges. The name, How Not to Fly, the name came about with an interesting conversation I had with a gentleman that's 101 years old today. He was a flight instructor during the Second World War in California, ground school. And when I was talking to him about the project and my ideas, he said, you know what the problem is today? We're not teaching people how not to fly. So you'll hear a little bit more about that later on. So these are my thoughts on loss of control. I see loss of control as a chain of events, and it's either with the aircraft or with the aircraft and the pilot. We start with normal flight, then a small deviation, larger deviation, unusual attitude, airplane upset, and then finally loss of control. And I think along with that, there's various reactions in the pilot. You're calm in normal flight, heightened anxiety, distress, panic, confusion, finally overwhelmed. And those can all happen very, very quickly in a loss of control situation. That loss of control chain of events increases in complexity. It's more difficult to recover a plane from loss of control than a small deviation. This increased complexity causes increased stress. I hope you can see this in the back, but on the horizontal axis on this chart, on the bottom left starts with normal flight, small deviation, large deviation, up to loss of control. And if you look at the red line, that illustrates the demands on the pilot. And this comes back from Economics 101 in college, where As a future farmer, I was looking at supply and demand and the price of wheat and the production of wheat around the world. The same thing happens with pilots in various phases of flight. So if you follow that red line along, there's increased demands on the pilot as the situation becomes more complex. The green lines represent different types of pilots. Student pilot at the bottom, experienced pilot right up to people like Captain Sully and Jeff Skillies at the top, and many, many, many others, and many, many in the crowd here tonight. The vertical axis represents pilot capacity. The reduction from the left to right on the green line represents the response of the pilot to increased stress. Capacity of the pilot reduces with increased stress in many situations. How you can improve the pilot's capacity is with knowledge, skills, and experience. And that's reflected as well in those lines moving up from student pilot on up to experienced pilots. You want to stay out of that segment on the bottom left, or sorry, bottom right corner. That's the area of potential loss of control, where the demands of the situation exceed the capacity of the pilot. So I looked at this problem from two perspectives. One was how to reduce pilot demands. And my answer to that came up to better situational awareness. It's easy to correct a small deviation. You don't want to have to correct an unusual attitude or aircraft upset. The second way, that represents the decreased demand. The second way was increase the capacity of the pilot. And this is through additional skills, knowledge, and experience. And you don't know how many pilots that I know that'll spend thousands on gadgets for their aircraft, thousands on annual inspections, thousands on insurance, but won't spend $5 on an instructor for an hour's flight for recurrency. So I think we need to work hard in helping pilots increase capacity. So that's the background to my solution. There's three parts to it. First part is changing the airspeed indicator, and this is to help with situational awareness. The second part is changes to ground school, and the third part is some changes to flight training. And these are not big changes. These are small incremental things that can be incorporated in the curriculum for training. First of all, the airspeed indicator, and before I show you what my version of the new airspeed indicator is, I want to, and I hope I have time to relate how I got to this idea from my farm experience in John Deere equipment. The airspeed indicator, I think we need to mark some new zones on it. And if you look at the chart here, you'll see some new colors. There's a new yellow zone and a new couple of new red zones. In other words, the dial is marked all the way around. It's also rotated 180 degrees. Airspeed indicator has four, most of them have four little bolts and two tubes on the back, pitot-static tubes. That's all it is. You can turn it over. I talked to the people over in the booth here, and they said, oh, we can print up a new new faceplate. As a matter of fact, we've done that, and they showed me one. Here's the rationale behind this. In most equipment, when the gauge is up and between the 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock position, everything's good. When the gauge is down on one end or the other, it's not good. In this particular situation, the more the needle points down, the more trouble you're in. Unless, of course, you're sitting on the ground. This particular solution can also work into digital flight displays, and it's just, in my view, a matter of programming the tape, programming the display to reflect the information that that you want on it. What I'd like to see is the numbers double and flash when you get to critical speeds, your approach speed, for example, stall speed. So in those, the people that understand a lot of mathematics and algorithms could incorporate things like angle of bank and g-force, such that your stall speed would increase as those forces increased. Changes in ground school, I'd like to see this a new focus on the airspeed indicator for better situational awareness. This would represent looking at the airspeed indicator and looking at these various zones of the airspeed indicator to show you how to prevent loss of control in the yellow zones, and how to recover from loss of control in the red zones. Obviously, the bottom end of the red zone is stall spin area. The top end of the red zone, you shouldn't be there, your airplane will be coming apart. The yellow zone is, the top yellow zone is area of caution, smooth air. And the bottom yellow zone, obviously, is into slow approach speed, slow flight, takeoffs and landings. I'd like to see additional focus placed on human factors. I think human factors are a important aspect, and it's in lots of flight training, it's glossed over relatively quickly. And I think we need to spend more time associating the various flight feelings with human factors that come up. In other words, show student a particular situation, slow flight, for example, and then add in an emergency and have him feel his reaction to that, and then go back and study the reaction that happened to get a better feeling of what feelings that represent challenges to you as a student. So we'd spend some time associating these various new flight color zones with different flights and the feeling sounds and what it looks like in the aircraft. We'd demonstrate warning signs of pilot capacity, as I just said, the anxiety, confusion, and things that can occur around various segments of training. So the Russ Turner, my 101-year-old friend, says we spend 95% of our time in the how-to-fly area. Training, knowledge, skill, experience, flight is in the top part of that airspeed indicator. We spend 5% of our time in the bottom part. So in summary, changing one instrument, better situational awareness, better training, knowledge, skills, and judgment. So those two things put together, my view, reduction of loss and control. So I think we can apply this to all aircraft. We can do it quickly. It's economical. We use a pair of yellow and red paint pens to mark up the indicator on existing ones. Easy to implement and effective, I think so.
I know the judges have worked really hard on this, and I was torn myself between some of the ones that the audience have picked there. And so what we're going to do is we're going to first award number 5 to Henry Voss on how not to fly. In position number 4 is Buzzball by Ethan Brodsky. Number 3, Solar Pilot Guard by Mike Fole. All right, this next announcement is going to be very important for a lot of people. In position number 2, Audio Attitude Alert by Andy Meyer.
I think that means we know what's going on, right?
That's right. And the decision has been made by the judges, the Remora system from Thomas Barron, Maxwell Lord, and Justin Zhu. Congratulations.
Way to go, guys. Nice work.